My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic. Since 1989, I've introduced myself with those words several thousand times at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous all across the United States. I've had the good fortune to be free of alcohol for more than 25 years and to share what I've learned with hundreds of recovering alcoholics. Alcoholics in AA recover through the practice of the 12 steps. The 12 steps are a simple course of actions which alcoholics in Akron, Ohio adapted from the practices of an evangelical Christian group. The steps are as follows. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. We humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. We continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I've studied and participated in a number of religious traditions, and in my experience, the 12 steps are the simplest and most pragmatic religious practice ever created. Recovering alcoholics discuss the steps obsessively, focusing on what works and ignoring what doesn't work. They don't talk much about beliefs, but you will hear quite a lot about how to change behavior and repair relationships. When someone recommends a course of action, they discuss what they have done themselves and what resulted from it. Everybody is looking for what will keep them sober. Many religious groups are welcoming, but 12-step meetings are genuinely friendly. To my mind, a true friend is someone who gives you the help you need when you need it. Many times I have walked into meetings feeling desperate and confused about the state my life was in. If I shared honestly what was happening, I inevitably received simple directions and encouragement that gave me a completely new outlook. This has happened even at meetings with complete strangers. No other ritual, meditation group, meeting, service, or lecture has ever given me so much direction and support with so little effort on my part. What's amusing to me is that the people who developed this powerful, non-dogmatic, experience-based religion are people who joined the group because of their inability to live a moral life. Many AA members, including some of the founders, have claimed that no one is capable of the humility and honesty that the steps require unless they have experienced the degradation of alcoholism. However, it seems to me that many people in this congregation are capable of great humility and honesty, in spite of never having ruined marriages or lost jobs due to drinking. It seems unfair to deny you something good just because you haven't screwed up your life. That's why I want to share some information on how the steps work in case they might be something you could use. Having worked the steps, I'd say the toughest ones are the ones involving taking moral inventory and making amends. When I hear people outside of recovery talk about the steps, they express concern about the first three steps, those which involve admitting powerlessness and turning our wills and lives over to a higher power. Talking about powerlessness and unmanageability sounds like giving up, and turning your life over to God sounds like religious fanaticism. So I understand why it's tempting to argue about these. I'm an atheist, so I can certainly find reasons to argue about this sort of Christian language. But there's an important change of orientation in the first three steps that is crucial for the rest of the steps. So to avoid any debate about what powerlessness and God mean in the context of the steps, I'm going to illustrate them with a parable based on something that happened to me. After college, I ended up living at a New Age hot springs resort, doing various maintenance and construction jobs for very little money. One day, another young man and I were sent up to a hillside where the ground had shifted due to flooding. As the ground shifted, it separated two parts of a sewage pipe coming down from a house on the hill. The two pieces of pipe were separated by about 15 feet, and there was now a pond of human excrement forming at the end of the upper pipe. We needed to empty the pond into the lower pipe using only shovels and pickaxes. It was also raining, so the pond was overflowing, forming little streams and smaller pools. Needless to say, you cannot move half-liquid excrement very easily with a shovel and pickaxe. However, due to the force of gravity and all the water from the rain, the excrement was flowing downhill. So we quickly realized that all we really had to do was remove any barriers of dirt or rock that were keeping the filth from flowing to the lower pipe. This was not a very difficult job and was actually kind of fun. In the end, there were several streams of poop merging into a river that poured back into the sewer pipe. A job well done. In this parable, the pond is my unmanageable life, and the force of gravity and the rain are the higher power. If I relied only on my own power, I could have spent all day trying to transport small shovels full of excrement from the pond to the lower pipe. The pond would still be there, and it would have filled back up by the next day. But simply by getting some obstacles out of the way and letting the rain and gravity do their work, the pond emptied itself into the sewer pipe. The only thing you need to know about your higher power is that it is something in your life, other than your personal plans and efforts, that encourages you to live a healthy life with strong relationships. Even though I'm an atheist, I am conscious of various things in my life that push me towards health and community. The trick is to move the obstacles that prevent me from enjoying health and community. Steps 4 through 9 are a specific method for removing these obstacles. There are two kinds of obstacles that get in the way of a good life. The first are habits and tendencies in my thinking and actions that lead me to do things harmful to myself and other people. The second is hostility in others that arises from the fact that I've harmed them. A refers to the first type of obstacle as a character defect. The second type of obstacle has no specific name, but is dealt with by making amends. Steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 all deal only with character defects. To deal with character defects, we must first learn what our own character defects are. We do this through a process called a moral inventory. It's hard to see exactly how we treat others. Psychology has long recognized that we tend to think we are better people than we actually are. Forgiving ourselves for our faults and projecting the worst ones onto other people. On the other hand, we often experience profound shame for things beyond our control. The moral inventory process deals with this in two ways. The first is to remember that we have decided to turn our will in life over to the care of our higher power. We are not trying to be good people, only gathering information so that our higher power can heal our lives. Second, we do our inventory by looking at our feelings towards others, not our ideas about ourselves. Our responses to situations are going to be more honest than our theories about who we are. The simplest feelings, and the most honest, are anger, fear, and lust. So the Big Book recommends starting with lists of who we are angry with, what we are afraid of, and what our sexual lives are like. Once we have those lists, we can look at each situation to see what character defects in us are contributing to the problems that arise. I'll explain how this works with something that makes me angry. I am often late for things, and when I'm late, I get really angry at myself. And then if somebody points out that I'm late, I get even angrier at them. Now, one character defect here is that I don't leave early enough to get to places on time. Another character defect is that I think it is worthwhile to get angry with myself. A third character defect is that when I've done something wrong, I get very defensive when someone points it out. Notice how I'm looking at myself almost as if I'm another person. I'm describing a common situation that causes conflict and anger, then identifying beliefs and habits that make that situation possible. The issue here is not that anger, fear, and lust are wrong in themselves. It's that these feelings are most likely to show up in situations where I have a lot of character defects operating. Looking at character defects in the fourth step can be painful, but sharing our inventories with another person in step five is usually a relief. If we share them with someone who is spiritually mature, they will put our defects into perspective. After my first fifth step, I had a sense of clarity and safety. Imagine a child playing in the ocean who gets knocked down by a big wave and rolled over and over by the wave so he can't tell which way is up. Just when he is afraid that he will drown, he feels the sandy bottom and manages to stand upright. That feeling of safety and release from confusion was exactly what I felt at the end of my fifth step. When it came to matters of right and wrong, I now knew which way was up, into the air and out of the surf. Of course, the whole point of identifying character defects is to get rid of them. The higher power becomes even more important here because the higher power removes the character defects. Step 6 and 7 set out two requirements for this to happen. The first is the willingness to have the character defects removed. This is not the same as wanting to be a person free of character defects. It's easy to want that. We're talking about being free of the actual character defects we have. As an example, take my habit of getting angry when I've made a mistake. I tend to feel ashamed of mistakes, and anger is a good way of avoiding these feelings of shame. So I may actually enjoy the defect, even though I'm attacking a person who is already hurt by my mistake. In AA meetings, we talk a lot about how to get the willingness to be free of a specific defect. We are honest about a lack of willingness and ask for advice. A common suggestion is to pray for the willingness, but there are others as well. The second requirement for the higher power to remove a character defect is humility, as step 7 makes clear. Humility in this case means that we don't fight the character defect. We may use prayer to directly ask our higher power to remove the defect. But the important thing here is attitude. We let ourselves be changed by the process rather than trying to wrestle ourselves into submission. These last four steps are about changing our character. The change in these steps is truly an inside job. This is going to change how we feel for the better. However, the goal of the steps is not to have some warm, happy feeling about our lives. This is a program developed for people who had destroyed families, friendships, and careers because of their single-minded devotion to alcohol. No spiritual program would be of any value to these people unless it made it possible for a recovering alcoholic to have functional relationships with another human being. The restoration of damaged relationships takes place in steps 8 and 9, where we make amends to the people we have harmed. The process is much the same as with character defects. So if you read it carefully, you'll see that the eighth step actually covers the same territory as steps 4 and 6 in terms of preparation for change. We make a list of people we have harmed and ask for willingness to make amends to them. It does leave out an equivalent to step 5 of going over the list with another person. However, many alcoholics go over their eighth step with a sponsor. This helps us catch people who ought to be on the list but aren't, and to take off people who don't really need to be on the list. Willingness is especially crucial in step 8. Often the people we have harmed the most are people who have harmed us as well. Willingness to make an amend means the willingness to overlook all of the harm done to us. to clean up our side of the street. If the other person has harmed us a lot, it may be unclear to us why we should be willing to make amends to them. We don't struggle or debate about this. Since our higher power is in charge of this process, we can simply pray or meditate on the issue and discuss it with others until our higher power reveals why we should be willing to make the amend. Making ninth step amends is both simple and difficult. It is simple because all we do is talk to the person one-on-one, acknowledge what we did was wrong, and then ask the person how they would like us to make an amend. Then we shut up, listen to what they say, and do our best to do what they ask. The difficulty of admitting to wrongdoing, especially if the person hurt us, is obvious. But I found the most difficult part to be listening to the other person. My sponsor was very clear. The amend was about what the other person wanted, not about what I wanted. They might not want me to do anything. They might want me to do some big job for them. They might tell me to stay away and never speak to them again. By doing this, I learned something new: the importance of learning what other people want from me. Before I did the ninth step, I would apologize by trying to get the other person to pity me, even though I had hurt them. Naturally, that upset the person even more. Listening allowed me to deal with their hurt, not my own. It was while my ninth step amends were underway that I actually lost the desire to drink and take drugs. Getting high was valuable to me as a way to control how I felt, as a way to feel good even when things were difficult. If I only worry about how I feel, there's always a reason to drink, because drinking may change my feelings for the better. In the ninth step, I learned the satisfaction of paying attention to the feelings of others. When I do that, there is never a reason to drink, because drinking always makes me less valuable as a friend, a family member, or coworker. I'm going to skip over the remaining three steps, largely because while they're valuable, they're a little less difficult to understand, at least for people outside of recovery. Continuing to take positive action, using prayer and meditation to develop a more spiritual perspective, and sharing my experience of overcoming obstacles are courses of action that have been recommended to you in other sermons here. What I most hope you will carry away from this sermon is the knowledge that there is a powerful spiritual practice available that many of your friends and neighbors may already have experience with. Many members of 12-step programs live in an age of miracles where taking simple actions leads to amazing transformations. They will be happy to share their knowledge of this life, way of life with you, but you may find it difficult to understand what they are recommending without some sense of the path of self-examination and reconciliation that they are walking. I can't explain everything about this path, but I hope you've been able to learn something about the meaning of terms like higher power, character defects, moral inventory, and making amends. If you learn how to apply these concepts to your own life and talk about these concepts with people in recovery, I can guarantee that everywhere you go, you will discover new fonts of wisdom to renew and transform your life.